really cool.
Bonjour, hello, welcome to Rosbif Rugby, your one-stop shop for all things French rugby, the leagues, top 14, Pro Day Deux, National, Champions Cup, Challenge Cup, the brilliant towns, cities, food, restaurants, bars, people, fandom, and everything in between French rugby. I am as ever joined by my trusty compadre, Rob, who I'm not going to ask how you are because I did see you 24 hours ago, give or take. I will ask, though, I would say both of us, if not hungover, probably slightly musty this morning. And I'll leave you to explain to the listeners as to why that was.
I was just going to say, I'm not sure how much is left in between. There was you listed out so much stuff that we talk about. What value we're giving to our listeners. Yesterday was your first taste of watching the London Marathon in the flesh. Something that I do kind of fairly religiously every year, partly because my flat is situated en route, which makes it significantly easier than it is for most people. But one of our good friends ran it, and it was a long day, but it went in for him to finish, partly because he started so late. But and then we had a few pints in one of our favourite pubs in central London, so... And it was a much later finish than I anticipated, I'd say, for a Sunday as well.
It was a cracking day. And as someone who's never been, nor unlike yourself, Rob, who very modestly hasn't referred to his marathon PB there, but it's quicker than you would think to look at him, is all I'll say. It was a cracking day.
That's a fair comment.
And Will did brilliantly. Rob, I'll be honest, I was hashtag inspired.
You were definitely feeling the buzz of.
I was feeling the buzz so much so that I know it's incredibly speculative, but I did put my name in for the ballot for next year. That's how hashtag inspired. So, yeah, it was.
Have I missed the boat on that now? Have I?
I think there's a couple of days left, but it does also. We were talking about, and we won't dwell on it too much. But there's another marathon. This may be of interest to the French rugby fan, which takes place, I believe, in September in and around Bordeaux, called the Marathon du Médoc. Do you want to briefly explain what that entails? Because it's quite something.
As far as I know, it is a marathon around the wine regions near Bordeaux. Médoc is one of the regions. I think it's one of the banks. Every mile, there is a stop for wine or food or both, I think. And we're not talking kind of, you know, energy gels or jelly beans or flapjacks or anything like that. I think we're talking kind of slices of steak and oysters and cheese. You know, it's typically French fare. And it does sound absolutely epic. Sounds like a kind of different kind of torture to your average marathon. But I think you talking about it yesterday and saying that you'd done some reading on it and did make me start to consider it as an option, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds absolutely amazing, maybe bar the marathon part. I think one of the key things about it is that they're quite strict, as much as apparently it's generally run in fancy dress. It's all, you know, all hijinks and everyone's incredibly jolly. I think if you don't finish in under 5 hours, then you don't get...
I think it's 7, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure it's tighter than that. It might not be as much as 5, but it's tighter than you'd think when you're being asked to also pile away oysters. Like 7.
Yeah.
Maybe one for another time. So we both enjoy a trip to France. You particularly enjoy a trip to Bordeaux. So maybe one of these weekends you can... Chaban Delmas, followed by 26.2 miles and 26.2 Vinos.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of marathon you could do and not really worry about your pre-race meal and pre-race nutrition and hydration. I think you probably could roll into it from a night in the bodega after the after a game at Stade Chaban Delmas. But yeah.
And Comte d'Oise d'Etienne. Very nice. We'll move straight on because the top 14 is starting to get really, really interesting. And something that's going to make a big difference, or not a big difference, but it's going to impact how the last few rounds pan out, is the GIF quota, which sounds pretty dull. However, our correspondent Rob has been doing a little bit of digging on this, and I think the impact of the rules as they stand is perhaps more significant than perhaps either of us had realised previously. So, Rob, do you want to take us through what you've found out, or continued to find out, I should say?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. It has a lot more implications than I perhaps realised. I think the GIF quotas and GIF rules have kind of been thrust into some limelight over the last few weeks with the whole, Joe Marler tweeting about opening up the rules for English players playing overseas to play for the national team, and probably off the back of Jack Willis's performance against Exeter. And, I get asked kind of what would happen if they did let, people playing overseas play for England. Would everyone go overseas? The answer generally is not as many as you think because of these GIF quotas. So GIF stands for Joueur Issu de Filière de Formation. So essentially, they played it. They were formed in France. So they join a club while or before they are 20 and stay for 3 years. They effectively become classed as a homegrown player. And they have to, there's various rules in place. Now, there are some, because it's before the age of 20, and if you stay for 3 years, there are some kind of nuances to this. So Henry Arundel, for example, will qualify as GIF once he's been at Racing for 3 years because he joined when he was 19, 20. So the rules, the basic rules, at the start of each season, the club has to draw up a list of players eligible to play professionally. And that doesn't include the academy players or medical jokers, but you get 35 contracts that you have to name, maximum of 13 non-GIF per squad, and it's 14 for newly promoted sides. So you can't, basically, clubs are capped at signing 13 players for their squad and naming them professionally. Now, there are medical jokers who generally tend to be overseas players, but that's by the by. Then it is tracked every week. So each game is, the GIF quota is tracked, and it kicks in at different levels. So you have an average across your whole season. It's all games, including the barrage, including the access match. And it's 14. You've got to have more than 14 for the promoted clubs, 15 for a club that comes up and stays up. So, for example, that would be Bayonne this year would have their minimum GIF is 15 players, and then it's 16 for all other clubs. And in Pro Day, it's 16 for all clubs regardless. So there's a little bit of leeway for promoted sides to kind of...
If you've just come up to settle in.
To settle in and
And I guess coming up from Pro Day Dur, where the... you're going to be at a disadvantage, aren't you, by a couple of players, which essentially is the leeway you get.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing which I didn't realise is the Doublons, as they refer to them, so basically the Six Nations period, the games they play in that Six Nations period, your GIF number is increased by players playing for France. So, for example, Toulouse's game against Cast, which I was at, which was a Six Nations follow weekend, Toulouse had 16 GIFs plus 8 France 15 players. So that's the likes of Ramos and Francois Cross and people like that. And then 2 France Sevens players. So France Sevens players also have this rule, as do the under-20s players. The under-20s players have to have played 10 professional games. So there's one player all season that has applied to, which is Axel Desperez for Pau. Whereas Toulouse in that that weekend against Castro, didn't get one for Castro Ferreira because he hadn't yet played 10 professional games for Toulouse. So that is quite complicated in itself. And obviously, in that scenario where they have 16 GIFs plus 8 plus another 2, that gets capped at 23. So your maximum score for a week is 23. Still with me here, Richard. This is
but I am slightly worried that we might not, our listener numbers might be in huge decline already.
So basically, you've got to average 16 over the course of the season, and there are various ways that you can bump that up. Long story short, now I've got a quiz for you, Richard.
Oh no!
And for the listeners, because this is what we want to know: who do you think has the best GIF quota? Who has the highest average number of GIFs across the season?
I'm going to go with, I don't think it was a red herring, I'm going to go with Toulouse.
Correct. 20.95. Any guesses at second and third?
And third, perhaps Bayonne up
Bayonne
there.
Bayonne a third, 19.3.
Second, oh God, let's say Racing.
Correct. Very good, Richard. Yeah.
Is it actually?
19.71.
Nice. The only reason, the reason I said Racing is they always on their team sheets, they always have a little thing next to them for however many have come through the academy, which I think a few of the teams do.
But they always seem
to have loads, or they shout about it. Oh, turns out now, I'm in the GIFs.
Well, who has the worst GIF quotas?
Surely it's Montpellier Madness.
They are currently second worst.
So the other one, I would say,
it makes sense if you know the rules.
Oyonnax.
Correct. They are 15.62, which is above their quota, whereas Montpellier, perhaps unsurprisingly, are the lowest below their quota, and they are the furthest away from hitting their quota. What a surprise. There is one other team that is below their quota.
Clermont.
Yes, and they are only more. I reckon that was before this weekend. No, that included this weekend. No, it didn't.
Three of those answers I've given there, even though they've all been correct, are proper guesses.
Sounds like a bit of a fix. Sounds like you've also been on allrugby.com, which it does say, if you reference the statistics on their website, please reference us. And it is like, you can really dive into it. That's where I kind of follow all my...
It's cracking, isn't it? It's a really good website.
Little bonus round.
Shout out All Rugby.
Little bonus round for you. Any name the two clubs with no kind of GIF bonuses? So no France 15, no sevens, no France under 20s bonuses.
Who I haven't said, so I'll say Bordeaux and Pau.
No, Oyonnax and Clermont.
I'm lost now, I'll be honest. I didn't really understand the question.
So Oyonnax and Clermont basically are the only two clubs that haven't had anyone represent France sevens, France under 20s,
or the national team.
And Bayonne have only had one sevens player.
I wonder if that was the case. Maybe one for next week's pod. Like, when would have been the last time? Maybe Clermont haven't been there for a little while, but when would have been the last time they didn't have someone representing one of those sides? Feels like it's probably an anomaly.
Yeah, and Poe have only just had one. So Guy, I reckon there's one. They had plus one in the first round, which I reckon is Guyaton in some of those World Cup warm-ups. Anyway, so the impact of that is penalties. So the penalties get rolled forward into next year. So as things stand, Montpellier, next season, whether they're in Pro Day 2 or the top 14, would start on -6, which is what you were saying. This is where the impact starts to come in. So for all their superstar names that they have ploughed cash into, their team on the weekend definitely had slightly more French players in it. You know, and some of the big star names weren't playing because they're having to now get their GIF quota back up to then make sure they're not penalised next season. And I think if I'm Montpellier, bearing in mind it also applies to Barrage, I reckon I would use my league games now to get my GIF quota up as much as possible so that you've got a bit of leeway for the Barrage, or the access match, sorry. You know, kind of, if you're there, you kind of gamble. Yeah. So that you can get like your Jan Serfontaine and your Ben Lamb and whoever, your Ungun Dandebe or whatever his name is, like, you know, get all of those guys in for the game that matters, but get your GIF quota up. So, because they might, knowing Montpellier, they'll want to go into next season wanting to win the league, assuming they stay in the top 14. So they don't really want to be starting on -6. That's actually quite a big blow. And that penalty ramps up pretty quickly as well. Depending, like, if they start to go
how far
even further
miss.
Below. Yeah.
Nice.
So there we go. Very well done on the quiz, Richard. I thought that was excellent.
Thank
Nearly
you.
As good as your top 14 and Pro Day predictions.
Well, yes, we'll come on to those in a moment, and I am slightly kicking myself for getting one of them wrong. But perhaps we'll give ourselves a minute to play some French jingles, let the listeners, allow all of that GIF information to soak in before we launch into the top 14. Top 14, another week, some real close games again. Where do you want to start?
Just generally, like the results this weekend, the teams that, like, it didn't, as dramatic as the games were, and there are a lot of dramatic games, not a lot changed. Like, the three teams that are trying not to get relegated all lost. I mean, Oyonnax are a lost cause now, well and truly, I think, especially the result they had at the weekend. But it weirdly changed very little. La Rochelle, the big losers, I guess. I guess we start there.
Start there. And that was the first game of the weekend. My boys, Cass, 70-something minute try, 25-24, which is big for Cast. I mean, are they going to be in that top six? I'm not sure. But I think they'd lost five on the spin or four on the spin before that. So it's a really decent result. And I mean, La Rochelle have now, that's a couple of, in the final kind of summation at the end of the season, they lost by a point at Bayonne, they lost by a point at Cass, which is another kind of infamously difficult place to go. Little bit, I don't know, starting to maybe feel a little bit what could have been for them, albeit be a brave individual to completely write them off.
Yeah, I think on this game, so Cast were the better side from what I could see. They had a few, there was an amazing bit, and possibly someone to kind of outdo our man Mignoni on the touchline front. So Cast had two tries chalked off, one for a double movement, which was very correct, and it was a good call from the ref. One for what appears to be dangerous play from Kagachi, the ball carrier, for Gianlad. So I think in carrying the ball, he managed to flip the tackler on his back and got a yellow card, and therefore the try scored off the back of it was called off, which was just bizarre. I hadn't watched that in English commentary, but it was, so I didn't quite know what was going on, but it was just strange. And then Ari Baren for La Rochelle had slightly dubious double movement try, but when
I didn't think that was I thought that was fair, wasn't it?
He kind of like just about made it and then like rolled it forward onto the line, and I think it's just about all right. But you can see if you're a Cast member of staff, you'd be pretty frustrated. But when Nathaniel Hulu, the winger, who has actually, I think he's scored 9 tries this season for Cast, top scorer for Cast.
Good.
Young lad.
Double.
Scored a really nice first try. kind of grubber down the wing, chased his own kick. And one of the Cast coaches charged towards like the fourth official, giving it the old VAR TMO sign, and got pulled back by one of the other coaches.
Oh,
like
I
a proper
that.
Like proper, like, you know, I'm sure a lot of our listeners will know that we are keen cricketers. It's like when someone gets given out LBW when they've hit it, and then the next time someone like middles it, someone from the sideline just shouts, "How's that?" Like it was a proper,
nice,
real bitter club cricket,
beyond
sort
sarcastic.
Of. Yeah,
that's
which
great to hear.
I've never seen from a coach. I thought that was
No.
Remarkable. I've not seen anything to kind of. I couldn't work out who it was either. I don't think it was Jeremy Davidson, but yeah.
I was going to say, I can't imagine someone like Jeremy Davidson doing that. You know, fairly long-standing in the game, old school, you know, Lions second row with a lovely little kind of, I don't know, what would you call it? Like diva moment on the side. It doesn't quite stack up.
Oh,
but
they, yeah, I think they were quite an old bloke who did it. They weren't like a young coach. It was kind of late 40s, early 50s. But yeah, they did look
awesome.
I think Jeremy Davidson is the only one in the coach lineup that's not French, so
yeah.
Yeah.
Very
but
good.
long story short, Cast deserved their win.
And they're still just in the hunt.
So I think they're 3 points off sixth, aren't they? On 49
also
points.
Very, very much in the hunt. Toulon, who had a cracking win over Toulouse. Did you see much of this? Did you see, for one, the big stadium tifo? Because this game was played in Marseille, wasn't it, at the Stade Velodrome?
Yeah.
The big sort of like red and black wall as the teams came out.
Yeah.
Looked pretty epic. Maybe, you know, arguably, maybe do that against any other side than Toulouse. But yeah, it still looked very cool. Also, I don't know why, but I had a bit of it looked like it was properly kicking off and the stadium was packed. Obviously, we went to the World Cup there. It's an amazing place to watch sport. Terrible place to get a beer. And also a terrible place when we went to get into the ground without getting kind of squashed up against like a concrete post.
Yeah.
But I think that was just saved for the English,
yeah.
for the Ros Biffs. But for some reason in my head, like the Félix Maillot iconic stadium has often not looked totally packed out this year. And I thought that might, you know, in a stadium that holds 65,000, that might, you know, it might kind of seep through and you know, Marseille, huge football town. But it looked belting. It looked like the sort of thing they'll be doing a lot more of in years to come. And one for the list, I would suggest.
Yeah, this is actually a relatively frequent thing. I think it's similar to Bayern and Biarritz doing the kind of and doing the thing in San Sebastian and Bordeaux doing one of the football stadiums. I think it was actually relatively common. And actually, I think from what I could tell, they've had Toulouse as the opposition quite a lot of those times.
Yeah,
like a lot of the fixtures. But
big
yeah, it
draw.
was like fully packed out. I assume it helps having Toulouse as the opposition to help fill it out. But this game, oh, it was a great game. This game to me felt like what the top 14 should be, because we know it's a weird one because we know that the teams have so many good players. And this was a high-class game with lots of good players on show. And yet the starting lineup for Toulouse didn't have anyone that started the previous week, which is ridiculous given the kind of quality of, not necessarily like the quality of the names, but the quality of rugby that they played with essentially a second team and then even
you guys like coming in off the bench, but
yeah, so Marchand came off the bench, for example, but the whole starting 15 from the Exeter game, none of them started this game. I actually went through and was like, oh my god, it is every single player has been rested or put on the bench. But they still play some, like, the level of coaching and like the secret sauce of Toulouse is just a thing. Like, they look so in sync and just so fluid. Like some more, and it's like the basic stuff of like, and I know we're talking about two French internationals, but Marchand to Flamand at the line out, it's straight in, it's straight down, then they're moving the ball and they're getting over the gain line and they play with so much pace. I guess they kind of were slightly the better team in this. I think it was a little bit of a smash and grab from Toulon, especially with the red card just before half time. So Aloisi got sent off on the 38th, 39th minute for a high shot on Matisse Castro Ferreira. Have you seen this?
I haven't.
It feels a bit harsh. It's like he clocks Castro
Aloisi
Ferreira.
is huge as well.
Yeah, he's enormous. Matisse Castro Ferreira is 6'2", 6'3" as well. Look, he's not a small lad, despite being quite young. But and he does get clocked on the jaw. But Aloisi is like bent at the waist. He's rapping. There's a slight drop in height. Like for me, there would have been enough mitigation. But it's one of those ones where the sheer force of the man and the sheer height of the man makes it look horrific. Like I think he was bent at the waist and wrapped, and there was a little dip in height. I think it could have been a yellow. And you don't really want to lose a big lump against Toulouse when they're going to bring Miafu off the bench, and that had quite a big
Yeah.
impact when Miafu came off the bench.
I think as you say, they were probably the bits. I didn't see that, but I did see a bit of a decent chunk of the second half and the highlights and tries and what have you. I think you have to say kind of fair play, even if it was a little bit smash and grab. 14 men against Toulouse, and maybe it wasn't their best 15, but they certainly had some arguably kind of world 15 pushing players coming off the bench. And I think it maybe shows, look, it's quite scary, as you say, the strength and depth in the Toulouse side. But you've said for a couple of weeks now that Toulon have started to really fire. I thought, again, they look huge, not just down the week, but they all just look massive. And I don't know if
They're a
that's just
big
the
team, like the back
as a
line is big as well.
It is big, really big. And then you've got there are a couple of tries, weren't there, for Lester Fionn-Gannoukou, who is just one of those guys who you're probably never out of a game with someone like that if you're within a score or two, because it's just such raw power.
I was thinking about him, like, because he played really well in the last couple of games where Toulon have found this form. He started both at 13. And it's kind of like we've completely slept on this signing. Everyone seems to have just made no fuss. But this is a guy who was tearing up trees for a number of years at the Crusaders when they were winning everything. He was sensational in that quarter final against Ireland in the World Cup.
Yeah.
He was an up-and-coming All Black. It's when Laumappé moved over, there was a big fanfare, and oh, the All Blacks have lost another star. Whereas there doesn't seem to have been that with Fionn-Gannoukou, and yet there should have
He
been. Like
is.
this guy is
Yeah.
a real superstar, or could have been like a starting All Black. It's and has been a starting All Black, which is, and he's what, 23, I think, 24.
He's young
For him to
still.
kind of up sticks at that age is quite a big statement, and it just seems to have been glossed over. And he is starting now to show the form that you might expect. And it's kind of what I was saying, like this is kind of what the top 14 should look like. When you get these names and then you get them playing like this, it's great to watch.
Yeah, it really is. It's coming, and can they compete with a fully loaded Bordeaux and fully loaded to lose. I don't know, but they probably can for patches. And as we said the other week, it's coming together at the right time for them. They're a team you really, really wouldn't want to play against. Not that there's any weak sides, but they'd probably be pretty low down the pile. And it's great to see as well, pure sheer genius acknowledged at the end of the game. Mignoni and Ugo Moller embraced. You could just about see a bit of the clipboard, and Ugo Moller had to concedingly kiss Mignoni on his beautifully shiny head.
There was a
great
Laurent
moment.
Blanc, Fabien Barthez moment, wasn't there?
There
And then
really was.
it was returned with like a number of proper bum pats from Mignoni on Ugo Moller as well. It was a lovely moment. I
There's
think
some
that just
stuff.
to finish up on this, the big difference is actually Melvin Jaminet. It was quite a nice little
It's
matchup having
reborn, doesn't it?
both him and Ramos opposite each other. And Ramos looked sharp. And he missed three kicks. They were tough, the kicks Ramos missed, whereas Jaminet's kicking, his boot is just enormous. And he is looking really good. I'd still pick Ramos every day of the week over Jaminet. But it's nice to see Jaminet back in some form and clicking in a side that is really starting to fire. They've just got a lot of players that are just playing some really good rugby all of a sudden. Dave Ribbons is really consistent for them, which is quite nice to see as well from an English perspective.
Yeah, they're going nicely. Before we maybe touch on the last game, a little bit of a summary elsewhere. Perpignan now looking up the table very much. There was a point when, well, obviously Bordeaux hadn't played, but I think they were a point behind Bordeaux. Beat Lyon 51-20, pretty comfortable. Albeit it was quite close with about 20 minutes to go, and yeah, it was just sort of overpowered them. Poe won the Siminzico. Joe Simmons
Yeah.
came out on top again there.
Played some
Late
great rugby,
try.
scored some really
They
lovely
scored some
tries.
really nice tries. Yeah, lovely try. First half, Gaëtan with a really, really rude offload, which is definitely worth a minute of your time to see. But yeah, Poe again played some, as you say, some really
And
nice kind of
Simmons kicking goals,
sweeping.
which is pretty key. I think the games they win, they tend to be pretty even in terms of try scoring and try conceding, but it is just Simmons kicking some goals, which tends to win them games.
Simmons
Gets them
MBE,
over the
that
line.
is.
Yeah, the MBE. So.
And then a bit of a beatdown for Clermont at Bordeaux Beg. Damien
Full noise,
Penaud
poor lad.
with 207 meters made, which for anyone, rugby statistics sometimes get a little
Wow.
bit misleading, but it is incredibly rare you ever see someone get over, well, anywhere near 200. So yeah, he was running riot. Again, a minute of everyone's time is Louis Bielbire's last minute tackle on is it Carbonneau? I can't remember. It was the Clermont nine.
Jeuneau and
Jeuneau,
Bezzy,
sorry,
wasn't
sorry. And unbelievable. And then
he?
Penaud
Just gas.
intercepts and sort of like flicks it up with his right boot. Yeah, ridiculous. But also saved them a bonus point, that a try bonus point. So could be really big in the final summation. The final game, which is really fascinating, is Stade Français top of the pile against Bayonne, who, well, spoiler is that they are still 25 games in a row away from the Stadion d'Auxerre that they haven't won. So
Really?
they don't travel well. But in the week, you said they've really loaded up for this one. And at half time, they were 24-5 up. Did you see much of this?
24/7. I've watched it, yeah. I've watched the
24-7.
highlights. I mean, Lopez in the first half was running the show in not in more than the way that we normally see him. Like some of his passing and Tiberian cutting lines, he could have had a hat trick if one was just marginally forward from a really lovely delayed pass from Lopez. Didn't quite get the angles right between the two of them, but it was a beautiful line and completely. They were cutting Stade Français to, like, they were finding gaps that, we kind of say that Stade Français are the best defensive team and they're a pretty solid outfit, well drilled, etc. But they were finding space and gaps pretty regularly. I
You
think
see the Maury try from the little
that
kind of,
is,
it's
I
not
don't
even
know
really
how they school some
a
schoolboy defending there actually, because they
I
honeypot, like they
think
all go
four
to smoke.
defenders
Yeah.
run. Yeah, it's still unbelievable though. So again, you must watch it, but it's not even really a crossfield kick. He's basically chipped it kind of sideways about 20 meters.
Yeah, probably
The I
bowled the
can't remember
pass
who it
instead of
was.
it.
found
it's the
it
guy with the long
on
name.
the wing.
Erbegunagaray. That's
Who
near
has sort
enough.
of like volleyball spiked it back in whilst four Stade Francais players converge on him. And Mori goes over and then for good measure, I think, was it Brad Weber comes across and gets absolutely blitzed trying to make the tackle of Mori.
And got a yellow card because he's gone full pelt and no arms.
And come off.
Barely nudged Federico Mori and also got him a yellow card for his illegal tackle.
But ultimately, Stade Francais with the last play of the game.
Did you see how it started? Bayonne had the ball at 79-57 or something. They're in that last ruck to then boot the ball off the pitch and they get turned over. The ball goes to Léo Barré, who finds a bit of space, a little bit of a shift of the hips like he did to England in the Six Nations. And they make the ground. They're on the halfway line and Léo Barré gets them up to kind of 5 meter line. And then it's just a case of them being patient. And, you know, you had Makalu and Habel Kufner and someone else outside them just
lurking
in acres of space. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Bayonne were desperately trying not to get done around the fringes. Heartbreaking for them. Like they didn't score a point in the second half, which is not the first time that they've kind of not done much in the second half. I think generally with Stad, we've kind of praised their coaching and their well-drilledness and line out and maul and scrum, but this was kind of slightly different perhaps and actually showing a bit of minerals, which
bodes
well for the barrage.
These are in really good stead. I think, you know, it's in theory this should have been, we thought it'd be a bit of a cakewalk, albeit in a Stad way with like a nice 12 point but fairly comfortable victory.
Yeah.
But it's you know, they've won what, six away from home. They've turned around a 17, 18 point gap in this one. They're doing some really good things. I think it's I don't know, I think we are both quite impressed with Stade Francais this year.
And weirdly, so I said earlier that nothing much had changed, but actually, because Toulouse lost, that really cements Stade's place at the top of
they're six clear.
Top of the pile, yeah. And actually, Toulouse, they're not, I personally think they are, because they play Stade and Racing at home in the next couple of weeks. So I think they will close the gaps and extend the gap over Racing. But in theory, at a glance, they could actually lose second place, but I don't think that's going to happen.
But no, great, another great game. I've forgotten Oyonnax Racing, which was the one game I got wrong out of 15 predictions. I, for some reason, thought Oyonnax were going to win for the first time since 8 BC. And sadly, that didn't come to pass. Racing continued to kind of, not cling
quite,
on, but...
quite a good side out from Racing, wasn't it?
Hold on.
They had their players back. Well, they had Gibert and Legarec, which is pretty key, given they basically don't have any reserve...
Halfbacks,
yeah.
In 1 minute, because we've got some time pressures here, looking forward to this weekend, the one I think is fascinating is Bordeaux at Bayonne. Bayonne, big emotional come down from Stade Francais. If there's a fully loaded team that can win that first game at Stade Rennais in 2 years, feels like Bordeaux rather could do it. Where are your eyes fixed this weekend?
La Rochelle Toulon, for me. Depending on the team Toulon take, you've got La Rochelle need to win that, otherwise they're at danger of dropping out of the top six. Toulon are building some momentum. They might send a weakened team, and La Rochelle might, you know, Sunday night games tend to go the way of the home side. So who knows? Montpellier Perpignan as well, with our political
sell out
politics. Is it?
Sell out. 4,000 Perpignan fans apparently, yeah.
Oh nice. So they've got some support there now.
Got some, yeah. Someone found the codes and let them in. Pro Leader, up next. Everyone's favourite league then, Pro Leader, which is as we said, for a little while, but at the end of a truly marathon season is really reaching its pointy end. Some interesting results here, of which I would like to add, I predicted all of them correctly, hence showing my superior knowledge of said league to
it didn't but it never made it onto social media or any sort of other evidence, Richard, so it's your word against mine.
And, I did that's a lie.
Whoever shouts loudest gets heard.
I did put up the WhatsApp message of me saying that Aurillac would beat Bezier.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did. And Van would beat Montauban. Yeah, where do we start? What was what caught your eye here? I know you've got a few thoughts on the Aurillac Bezier game, I think.
Yeah, I just can't get my head. This is just such a classic case of I just can't get my head around this league. Like, Bezier have got such a, for that league, a star-studded side and play some great rugby. Aurillac is renowned as being a tough place to go, but Bezier just keep, like, losing away to, like, teams in the bottom half of the league. Like, they lost to Rouen away recently. I just don't understand it. I went with Bezier to win this one because Aurillac have been in a really bad run of form, and including losing recently to Provence. But actually, from the highlights I saw of that game, it was like it was that weekend where every game in Europe was just ridiculously windy, and like Gopeth. From the kickoff, like booted it way dead from the very first kick of the game. But actually, if you're, yeah, there can't be that many people who have built a reputation for playing in windy conditions. But Jimmy Gopeth is definitely one of them. having played at Wellington and Newcastle, and I wonder if maybe it was a case of Gopeth just steering Provence around the pitch pretty well as a man in his 40s who's been doing this for years might. And, you know, the kind of guys running the show for Bezier in from the sunnier climes of Portugal perhaps, you know, didn't quite have that nous of navigating tricky, windy, horrific conditions. So maybe that's a kind of nod to Provence's recruitment and Jimmy Gopeth, who's gained himself another year as well this week.
Yeah, what a legend.
And reposted us, which is makes him even more of a legend. But
yeah, top man. Always got time for Jimmy Gopeth. Didn't you see him on the tube fairly recently?
I saw him on the tube. I think it was after the World Cup. Yeah, it would have been this season. And I kind of asked him, oh, how's Provence, mate? And he kind of looked a bit shocked that someone had recognised him. It was like, oh, it's good, mate. It's yeah, it's warmer than here. And he was kind of
insight.
He had a lot of baggage, so he was kind of like, "Yeah, and that's where I'm off to now. Nice. Get back to the warmth, sort of thing."
Fabulous place.
And he seems like a great bloke. I'd love to see him in the top 14, actually. If even if he is going to be 41, 42, or whatever old he is,
would be a lot of fun.
He certainly seems like a player that would suit the top 14 in the kind of Cami Lopez style. Yeah. But that kind of actually really cost Bezier in terms of the league. Like now, I think because Van and Provence both won, they are now 5 points behind behind Provence. So they are
Provence
actually
and Van
nearer.
Are secure in the top six.
Yes, they are. And I think Bezier will do well to catch them up now. They've got two away games, one of which is this weekend away at Grenoble, who are on fire. And actually, if Grenoble win that, Bezier could be worrying more about, you know, securing a home barrage game rather than trying to get straight to the semi-finals. I think they probably will end up third or fourth, so they'll probably get a home barrage game. But for what has been a three-horse race at the top through all season, now does seem to be Van versus Provence, and they're both going to go straight through to the semi-finals of the barrage anyway. So
you mentioned Grenoble there. They really are flying, and they put away Biarritz very, very comfortably. Obviously, Biarritz struggling, but have performed well in patches at home, still, you know, a a decent side that you'd say has underperformed. I think they were 30-nil, give or take, down at half time in this one at the Aguilera. When we
it's
went
a long
there,
old way that as well.
It's a bloody long way. And some of the old boys there were pretty old school, to put it mildly. I'd imagine there was some finger clipboard wagging going on in the stands in that one. But it means Grenoble, as you say, obviously, including their 6-8 point deduction, whatever it is, are right up in the mix.
Six wins in a row.
Is it six in a row now?
Yeah.
And which is almost unheard of, isn't it? I'd suggest, given the run of away games.
Biarritz, including right breaking the Bears' home unbeaten home record.
Yes.
And beating Van away. So they're not mucking around here. Like, they are really flying.
No, they're starting to motor, aren't they? And then at the bottom, it means Biarritz are still not clear. Rouen are by far and away in the worst position, but they have really closed the gap on Montauban, who appeared to be a little bit in free for all, albeit, you know, lost at home to a very impressive Van side this week.
Yeah, Van can really turn it on as well. So I think that's... I went with Montauban, but it was one of those ones slightly more out of hope than expectation because they just edged it against Nevers the previous week. It was kind of, can they carry that forward, that bounce? But Van are the best away. I previewed it as the kind of best, the worst home team versus the best away team. And I think in the kind of form that Montauban are in, that was pretty optimistic, actually. Yeah. Montauban, I said, had a pretty horrific run in, partly because their home games looked so tough. But they go away to Colomiers. They then have Mont-de-Marsan at home, and then they go away to Aurillac. And Colomiers and Aurillac, given they're both in the bottom half, are probably the two worst teams in the bottom half you could be going to. Rouen, by comparison, go to Van as well. So, and Mont-de-Marsan. So, but they do have Saxby at home, which I would say that's a win. So that could be enough to get them, well, ahead of Montauban. But is it enough? You know, Biarritz.
An access match place.
Yeah, and Biarritz. So Biarritz are currently 6 points ahead of Rouen and four ahead of Montauban. So in theory, they've got at least one win margin for error. But they go away to Argen, home to Provence, away to Brive. So that's none of them tough. Have got easy games there. Rouen have got the most bankable win with the home game against Saxby, who should now be safe after a great couple of weeks, actually, or great 3 weeks, unbeaten in three games, which is pretty, pretty useful.
Put away Brive. Bottom end.
They put away Brive, big second half showing. I would say, I think we were kind of joyously texting each other and another friend of ours that Saxby are pretty much safe and in Pro Day Deux for another year. So it is a three-way battle at the bottom. I think Biarritz will probably be all right. It's just who's going to end up in the access match and who's going straight down.
As it always does, it's gonna change, and there's gonna be loads of twists in the last few weeks. Feels like there are an incredible number of moving parts in this because it's such a long season, and then you have the sort of quarterfinals barrage access match. Yeah, you speak about Biarritz. Play with Biarritz had to play Van at some point. You know, if Van could be clear, do they rest a few? Does that have an impact on what happens at the bottom of the league? It feels kind of gloriously messy, and just how we like it in Pro Day Deux.
We're not even touched on the bottom end of the barrage with Dax 69 points, Mont-de-Marsan 68, Nevers 68. That's the real upstarts in that, suddenly in the driving seat.
Brilliant.
Mont-de-Marsan host Dax this weekend, which
Derby
is just,
that, isn't it, as well?
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be really tasty. That's death, and it's the last game of the round as well, so they'll know where they all are. That's really tasty, that one.
Excellent.
I've just seen Dax play Nevers on the last game of the season. Go to Nevers on the last game of the season. Wow. So that could be anything. anything can happen in the only team guaranteed to finish where they are currently is Colomier. I can't see them moving out. They've just been ninth all season, pretty much. Like, and Aurillac at 11th. They're just, yeah, they're rock solid in those slots.
Happy in those areas. Any other shout out I had on, I mean, there's loads of shout outs because always having Pro Day there, but I don't think he's broken it. But I think he's matched it.
No, he has broken it. Yeah.
He has broken it now. You sure?
Rafael Costa Storti. Yeah.
Costa Storti. 21 tries with three plus to play. It's a pretty good effort.
Yeah, to break the record that convincingly at this stage is pretty impressive, isn't it?
Out to Rafael Costa Storti.
And he lit up the World Cup as well. He was one of the stars of that.
Is he off? Is he?
Oh, I don't know.
He's not going to Stade Français. Have I made that up?
That is 21 tries in 18 games, by the way.
Decent, decent strike rate.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
to go
he's
on, going, on top of
he's
the
going
top
to
of
Stade.
Three in the World Cup. Is he?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he is going to Stade. Seems like a pretty good pickup that.
I do wonder if Bezier definitely building. I was looking at some of their fan Instagram accounts today. And they definitely are building again to kind of be back up to their kind of former glories. But
Fabled
I think,
best.
You know, if they've got a couple of those Portuguese lads are quite old, Fernandes and Marquez, and then if Storti goes as well, then you know they're actually going to lose some of their superstars, and they might actually be better off staying in Pro Day 2 and developing a few more.
Rebuilding again,
yeah. I think all of those players, Costa Storti's GIF, I think, or one of them is Marquez's GIF.
Good either way. Good, like it's been a club that had a few difficulties off field, I believe, over the years.
Sort of, I think it's also quite cool that they have that
former
little
glories.
Portuguese.
Then,
we were kind of referenced quite a bit that there's quite a lot of kind of tier two or so called tier two players in Pro Day doing its real showcase for it. I think that's why I was so disappointed with the Portugal v England A game and none of the Pro Day 2 players being released. So I wanted that to be like kind of, that was almost going to be like a bit of a Pro Day 2
tribute.
Like All Stars 15, yeah.
Yeah, it was a shame. It was kind of a bit of the whole thing was a bit of a farce in the end, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Just to look ahead to next weekend, I want to jump down a league quickly because it's the last game, it's the last round of games in Nacional, which is the league below Pro Day 2. And it's really interesting for a couple of reasons. One is that the top two teams, so similar setup in terms of securing a straight to a kind of home semi-final berth, the top two teams, Stade Niçois, down in Nice, and Albi, play each other. And the second...
And they are locked on 91 points each.
They're on 91 points each. And, I mean, you would assume that Nice would be favourites, but Albi have had a cracking year and the stakes are pretty high to get through. Because in third place, we've got
89 points.
89 points, so just tucked in behind is Narbonne. And then one place behind that is Carcassonne. So, and then Suresnes in Paris are on 80 points. So that top four can't be breached. But obviously the carrot of an additional rest week the week after is pretty enormous. Carcassonne and Narbonne don't have gimmies either. I think Narbonne go away.
Narbonne go to Suresnes.
Go to Suresnes, and Carcassonne are down on the south coast at Carcassonne, who are a club I think have had a few financial woes recently. A little few rumours of them. Yeah, I don't know enough about it, but I know they were spoken about in kind of similar terms to Blagnac and Biarritz. So hopefully hopefully nothing too damaging there. But one all big club, Stade Niçoise, a bit of a sort of newer upstart, but the others, we're talking sort of real hotbeds in kind of the south of France. It's also interesting for the weekend after, for any, and we put some flight recommendations and itineraries up on our Twitter page over the last week, for any Harlequins fans going out to watch their Champions Cup semi-final in Toulouse, because I think it's fair to say Narbonne, Albi and Carcassonne are all incredibly reachable for a day trip from Toulouse. All cracking grounds, all places of real interest, some pretty storied towns as well. And with that in mind, next week we're going to do a little bit of a bonus feature on a weekend in Toulouse, potentially incorporating whatever game that turns out to be.
At least one of those three at sides, least one. Albi, Narbonne, Carcassonne will be playing at home on that, in a barrage.
And could very easily be two.
Yeah.
So we'll cover that in a bit more detail. But that's a nice little Brucey bonus for anyone heading out there.
I think it's we're miles away from being able to get any footage of that, I think. But some of the crowds in those games as well are they're getting some really good numbers there.
Fox
as well.
On Narbonne the other week was there were 9,000.
9,000. Yeah,
I know they're close by, but that's pretty impressive by any stretch. Pro Day there, National, anything else?
No, it can wait till the Pissy Fours. Just say that Périgueux are currently in sixth, the final barrage spot, having played 26 games, because their last game is the Blagnac game. So they've got their gimme in that, and they could still be caught by Chambéry. So the Périgueux players will be sitting nervously, I imagine, or just wanting to go on holiday. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. Alrighty,
another spanner in the works in some French league jeopardy.
Petit fours and a few digestifs to come. Right, Rob, start us off. Petit fours. What's tickled your interest this week?
Well, I saw today, and where I'm picking up just where we left off of talking about the Blagnac gimme fixture, it has been confirmed that Blagnac will restart next season, but they will start in Fédéral 1, which is the fifth tier, so two leagues below where they currently are. They were given the option of the normal straight relegation into National 2, but refused it because they don't want the travel. So National 2 or National 2 is still a national league. You still have all the travel, and that is essentially what crippled them in the end, because they couldn't get the money to fund all those trips. Whereas Fédéral 1 has regional pools, so they have less travel, which helps them kind of manage their costs. So they've kind of basically been able to choose where they go back in. I think they've generally been quite supported. They've had a bit of guidance and mentorship from Toulouse as well, Stade Toulousain, to kind of help them navigate the murky waters as well, which is quite nice. Quite a heartwarming story, actually, that I was reading through Google Translate earlier.
That's good to hear. They're not start totally again. Gone to the wall. Yeah.
And I think I saw that they're losing about 10 players from where they had. So about 10 of the squad have found other employment in National 1 or 2. So good for them as well. But sounds like they should have a fairly decent squad as well. And they've kept a core. And hopefully those guys, I imagine they'll still be getting paid, especially off the back of that article in the Telegraph this week, which I know has attracted quite a lot of attention on Twitter about
Charlie Morgan article.
Club rugby, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a fascinating article. If anyone, there's an article by Charlie Morgan about payments in club rugby, and we kind of responded with, I would love to see what this looks like in France. But yeah.
Nice. No, that's good. That's good to hear that they're at least tentatively kind of stabilized and hopefully on the way back up. And if there was anywhere geographically that you might sneak a few half decent rugby players coming away from other clubs or whatever, then it's going to be a Blagnac, isn't it? Or Toulouse as a Blagnac as a suburb of Toulouse. What else? Anything else on your anything else heartwarming on your petty fours?
I've got one, but you can go if you want. I've got another one. I think you might have seen my one, but it's a little question for you that you can go.
Yeah, I haven't got too much. So a couple of little transfer things that have been confirmed. Georgian back row, Andre Duvali to Perpignan, 18 years old. So the Georgian contingent in French rugby continues to swell, which is great to see. You'd imagine an 18-year-old Georgian back row that's been picked up by Perpignan without wanting to mix too many stereotypes together. There's probably going to be a fairly physical young man. So yeah, it'd be really cool to keep an eye out for him. And I think this actually confirmed early last week, but obviously we recorded on Monday. But it was Joshua Moresby, who's gone from the Hurricanes. He signed a 2-year deal. I think he might even be the top scorer, well, at least in the Hurricanes, but possibly in
Hurricanes are
Super
top,
Rugby
aren't
at the moment. He's going to Montpellier.
they? No. Well, you know who
Another
else? Have you seen who else is going to Montpellier?
straight up
Rejoining
Billy.
Montpellier.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about
Yeah. He's playing
that.
some good rugby, and Biarritz have got some, they've got their own financial woes as well. And I imagine getting rid of Mohamed Aras.
That's a good
I
offer
wonder how
wage
much he is
for
getting paid at Biarritz, to be honest.
don't know,
You'd
mate.
hope less than Jonathan Joseph. You'd hope.
Hope less than Billy Searle. That's what I'd
Yeah.
hope. The other, what else have I got here? It is this weekend, it's the women's cup final. It is Bordeaux
Ah.
v Toulouse, and it is very logistically well thought out, being played in Argen, so kind of smack between the two.
Nice.
Slight caveat is that I think they're going to be missing a few stars because it is also the Grand Slam
I
decider
was going to
of
say,
Le
yeah.
Crunch,
The only game in the Women's Six Nations that's
the only
worth
game,
watching.
which is being played at your favorite place, Stade Chaban Delmas.
Yeah.
So, and I think has already sold out. So, probably a
Wow.
pretty cool occasion.
That'll be good. That will be a
Slightly
good game.
let saw this as well. This is my last thing, and it's not as related to the French side of things, but I know I said earlier, so Damien Penaud made 207 meters against Clermont,
Yeah.
which is kind of off the scale stuff. Do you want to hazard a guess at how many meters Ellie Kildon, the English and Quinn's fullback, made against Ireland in their, I think it was 88-10 win at Twickenham?
300.
Yeah, you're not far off. It's 351.
What?
Which is give or I mean give or take a quarter of a mile, which is yeah, which is kind of off the scale stuff. But I thought while we were talking about the final of Le Crunch, remiss to not touch on that because that is wild behaviour.
Now, Richard, we, in order that we've talked about a lot of rugby, and there is a lot of rugby out there, but and it's quite hard to watch all of it, and time is a scarce commodity, and I'm not particularly good at time management myself, but
Particularly not around the GIF quotas, no.
no, God no, have you seen how Rouen can help you get your life admin done while watching the rugby? Have you seen what service was being
I
offered at a
think I
home
have.
game?
I think I have. If it's I can only if it isn't what I think I've seen, and there are multiple offerings of this ilk, then that is incredible. I think I have seen it, yes.
It was on Twitter as well. They were offering haircuts on the sidelines during one of their home games, which,
Amazing.
that is a time saver that I am, rather than the idle chit chat, you can kind of slip in like, oh, doesn't actually, can you style me like Sebastian Tiller's board over there and maybe sort me out some nice chiseled facial hair like him, please.
Incredible, isn't it? Feels like I don't know where in the stadium was. Feels like there's some, could be some jeopardy involved there. Like you're having a little short back inside and someone whacks a spiral
Jimmy
into
Gopeth
touch.
playing for Provence kind of, smashes one. Or it's, Jimmy Gopeth has that kind of aggressive goal kicking style, doesn't he? If that one of those
Yeah, hits it
lands on a set of
hard.
scissors, yeah.
Yeah, or kind of, it would. We have on occasions in French rugby seen scraps around the touchline fall over the advertising boards, and you're there with the number three clippers. But I mean, it's brilliant, isn't it? I think as well in the last couple of weeks, we've sort of said, are we struggling a little bit on the petty fours? And without fail, there is always some absolute gems knocking
I think,
about
yeah, I
just
think
like
that one's
that.
that was kind of, I saw that after we recorded, so it's actually a week or so old, but that was I
Well,
mean, there's been some classics over the last few weeks.
hopefully then, I'm just going to say it, hopefully Rouen survive the drop because we need to be seeing way more of that.
Yeah, I genuinely next time, well, if we go, I genuinely might try and sign up for the service. See what the full immersive experience is at Rouen.
The old candles in the ear and kind of that sort of thing as well. Oh, excellent. Fair play to Rouen. I think that's it on my list. We're done for
Yeah, that's
another
it for
day.
me.
Alrighty, well.
Plenty of big games coming up this weekend in all three leagues in France, the top three
Yeah, there are
leagues in
some really
France.
good ones. And it is there's just that added level of excitement, jeopardy as we inch towards the kind of
Start to
final
see a few
standings.
more full noise away teams, which I think is, like I said, what we really want to see.
100%, 100%. Yeah, it's hotting up for sure. I've also seen on just to confirm that Grenoble Béziers at the Stade des Alpes has already sold 10,000 tickets for this weekend.
Wow.
It's a big ground that, but that's some going.
Yeah.
For a second tier match. So yeah, that could be a cracker as well. Grenoble absolutely flying as we discussed earlier. Alrighty, well, thank you for joining us. I've been Richard. That has been Rob. We'll be back next week, discussing all things French rugby as ever, and we'll also give you our rundown of a perfect weekend in Toulouse, and as we discussed, maybe one of Albi, Narbonne, Carcassonne, or a few of them all muddled together. I've been Richard, that has been Rov. We have been Rosbiffs. Au revoir.
Au revoir.